Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Anna.
And I'm Caroline.
And this is Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
A very warm welcome to our Gilmore Girls special episode.
Woohoo!
In which we're going to discuss the utopia of Stars Hollow.
Then we'll be joined by Pim Yasarikoski to talk about the romantic relationships of Rory and Lorelai.
And then Barbara Speed joins us to talk about work and careers in the show.
And finally, we're joined by Laura Snapes to discuss class, family and belonging in the show. Hello!
Hello.
Welcome to this special Gilmore Girls episode of Seriously.
We're so excited to finally be sharing this with you. It's been a long time in the works, I have to say.
Yeah, I've been watching so much Gilmore Girls. We're super excited for our event next week, the Seriously Gilmore Girls quiz, which we've talked about on the podcast before. It is sold out, but please sign up to the waiting list. And if you've got a ticket, well, there's not much better preparation you could be doing than listening to this special.
If you do want to still get on that waiting list, by the way, head to seriouslypod.com and click on events and stick your name down.
So for anyone who doesn't know, Gilmore Girls is a long-running series that was on the WB network created by Amy Sherman Palladino, and it's about a mother-daughter relationship between Lorelai and Rory Gilmore and all their friends, family, etc. If you haven't watched Gilmore Girls, you kind of need to watch some before you listen to this podcast, because I think you might just be lost.
Yeah, it was first on in 2000, it ran 2000 to 2007, but it's now all on Netflix, so you can go indulge. Yeah, this is a spoiler-heavy podcast for the main 7 series of Gilmore Girls, but we are not going to talk about the revival episodes that are coming soon on Netflix. This is a pre-revival podcast, so have no fear. We don't know what happens, so we're not going to tell you.
No, there is some vague speculation and some allusions to trailers, etc., but we haven't seen the episodes and we're not talking about them. So I feel like the news has been pretty miserable over the last couple of weeks. I'm sure a lot of listeners will agree. I've been in a totally escapist world, just binging on Gilmore Girls.
Yep, same here.
And part of that for me is literally just immersing myself in the town of Stars Hollow, which is the first thing we're going to talk about on the special. I am obsessed with Stars Hollow. I've been obsessing over like the geography and the fine details of like what shops are where in Stars Hollow and like what festivals happen at which times of the year. And I just think it's got this amazing sense of place, right?
Absolutely incredible. I don't think I've ever known anything like it in a TV show before, both because it's so present all the time. Like you say, if you've watched enough Gilmore Girls, you can basically like draw a map of the center of Stars Hollow. But also because of the like the sense of community that goes with that as well. You know, so many scenes take place in the town meetings or at one of their crazy seasonal festivals, of which there are so, so many. Mm-hmm. That, yeah, it just permeates everything. It's not like an event suddenly in one episode, oh, there's a harvest festival. It's like, no, of course there's a harvest festival, because every episode there is something going on.
Yeah, and there'll be like little lines like, oh, I drove past Stars Hollow once. If that was the town full of pumpkins in March, and then Rory's like, oh, they came late that year. So you know how like much preparation goes into everything, and it's sort of like a lot of the B plots in especially the first 3 series will all revolve around like Taylor's struggle to set up a soda shop or whatever it is that week. And for me, that means that I think that just it becomes such a textured world, and you feel so like you can second guess the motives of like pretty much everyone who lives there. You get to know the characters so well. And I think that's part of what makes it feel so escapist, because you're just like, okay, back in Stars Hollow, in the same way that you can with Hogwarts or somewhere like that.
It also is a really, really good device by the writer to make it an ensemble drama.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, as the title would suggest, I think you would end up focusing in on the Gilmore girls. It would be a story mostly about Lorelai and Rory and Emily and Richard.
Mm-hmm.
And Luke might be a supporting character. But because of the way Stars Hollow is constructed and because of the importance of its various events to all of the main plot lines, you know, people like Kirk and Miss Patty and Taylor and Babette are like secondary characters.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's where it contrasts with something like Friends, where when there's like another character that has to come in for some reason, they're like really shoehorned into the plot and it's like quite weird. Whereas I like that Babette could perhaps feature in an episode where she's just shouting across from her house and it never feels like it has to be a fully fledged plot line. It's just part of the everyday world that you're living in.
I always think that with Friends, the weirdness of them having guest stars became so weird because the show started to acknowledge it.
Mm-hmm.
So like later on, you know, when Brad Pitt guest stars, yeah, and he comes to a Thanksgiving dinner, right? Mm. And the whole premise of the episode is that like, oh, this like random guy we don't know has come to Thanksgiving. Let's like grill him and ask him loads of questions like we've never met him before. Exactly like you would with like a new colleague or something. So it just becomes a bit meta and a bit focused and a bit like us versus them. Whereas that never happens with Stars Hollow.
One of my friends jokes with me that she thinks the four final words of the whole series are just going to be like, Lorelai woke up or something, like it was a dream. And I think there's something in that. This is a utopian world, right? It's a completely hyperreal, saturated, colourful, perfect vision of a small town in which there's never really any problems. They even like take the piss out of that in like the episode, for example, where Paris comes because she wants to investigate the quote seedy underbelly of small town life, and the only thing she has to go on is the fact that Rory has suggested that they put some of the videos in the video store on a slightly higher shelf if they've got like provocative covers, and they put them all behind a curtain and it becomes like a thing on censorship in small town America. And, you know, Taylor tries to install a traffic light, or does install a traffic light, even though there's no traffic at all. And I think it's such a vision of perfection that it becomes just so comforting and fun to be in.
And I suppose your friend's theory maybe does get some support from the fact that it's where Lorelai fled after life had completely gone off the rails. You know, she left her parents' fancy house and their whole world, and she ended up in the place that could not have been more perfect for her circumstance. You know, it goes back to that whole thing about, you know, it takes a village to raise a child, and she found her village and they helped her do it and they became part of the place. So yeah, you could argue that maybe it's all too perfect.
But I think as well, the fact that there are all these like tiny arguments over like, I don't know, the Poe Society, or
love the Poe Society.
Yeah, it's a great episode. Or like the sort of small town rivalry between, I can't remember whether it's Litchfield or West Hartford or someone who refuses to host the
Woodbury.
Yeah. Woodbury. Hank over at Woodbury is Taylor's rival.
Love Hank.
Who refused to hold the Festival of Living Pictures, so they have to hold it in Stars Hollow, and they get really into it, obviously. And I think those sort of little arguments sort of stop it from becoming sickening ever. It just becomes like this weird, frustrating but wonderful place. And there's a great line, Lorelai and Luke are sort of in the diner looking out over the winter festival procession that they do like through the town centre, and you know, Lorelai's persuading Luke to turn his lights off so that he'll watch it with her. She's like, I just can't imagine living anywhere else, can you? And I think especially Lorelai and Luke are these figures who have really found their people. Luke grew up there, so he's never left his people and he's never ever going to leave Stars Hollow. Lorelai found them when she needed it the most. And I love that sense of community. It feels great. And I think sometimes it's easy to take the piss out of Gilmore Girls for being a bit saccharine, but I do think it's just so warm and lovely.
Yeah, it is completely. And I think partly what helps cut through that slightly saccharine leaning, is the fact that a lot of the community activities are really, really weird and kind of absurd. And that makes it seem eccentric rather than like completely cuddly.
Exactly. And I also like that it makes it easier for you to get a sense of the year passing. Every festival they do is so ridiculously seasonal that it makes you really feel like you do live there, because you know what it looks like to live in Stars Hollow at Christmas, at Thanksgiving, at Easter, summer. You have a real sense of what it's like to spend a whole year in Stars Hollow, which I think is really important.
And actually the Festival of Living Pictures episode that we touched on, I think is one of the best evocations of that, because I found myself so sucked in to the like inter-town politics and the who gets to play who, that about halfway through I was just suddenly like, hang on a second, this is objectively weird what they are doing.
Yeah.
They are dressing up and pretending to be famous pictures.
When you're like, hang on, Lorelei's She is the Renoir girl. How can they not give Lorelei the Renoir girl? And then you're like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, you know, it's fundamentally not very good entertainment, like watching people stand really still wearing costumes.
I think it's amazing, that episode. It's a really bizarre episode.
I uncovered this little factoid that it's the only Emmy that Gilmore Girls ever won was for the makeup in that episode.
That's amazing. It's so good.
It is absolutely incredible. But it's a mark of how good the sense of place is in the show, that you are completely convinced that a Festival of Living Pictures is a really rational thing for people to spend their time on.
Well, I'm so excited to revisit Stars Hollow with the revival, and let's hope it's exactly as we remember it. So now we're joined by Pinya, who's the New Statesman subscriptions assistant, to chat about romance in Gilmore Girls. I feel like from the off, Rory's love life is perhaps a more highly contested area and one that has more like fan teams and discussions. So maybe we'll start with that. Pinya, do you have a favourite Rory love interest?
Not really a favourite, because I don't really like any of them.
Yeah, they're all kind of shit in their own way,
yeah,
aren't they?
I feel like it's especially at the start, I find it's almost like you do get the bad boy appeal of Jess, but when they actually start going out together, he's so horrible to her. Like,
he's a really bad boyfriend, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, he is. Obviously, he does get a little better, but still, it's just all in all pretty bad, like how he treats her.
Yeah.
And like as a friend, I think, like for example, Lane and Lorelei are a bit like too understanding.
Do you reckon? I think Lane's quite good in that she is quite like, I don't really like him. She does make it quite clear that she doesn't like him, but that she sort of says, I should try and like him. But yeah, I agree with you, because I was like definitely a huge Jess girl when I was watching this originally. I still love his whole plotline when he's not dating Rory and he's trying to get in with Rory. And I think he's really charming then and really like good at trying to wheedle his way in. But once they start going out, you're right, he's not a good boyfriend. He's like completely emotionally unavailable, doesn't call her back, never plans anything.
I also feel like there's very like not much effort on Rory's part to even try and like explain like why they have a connection, because it's clear that they do. Mm-hmm. And especially because they have like such similar interests and they can talk about the books and stuff, but it's never really, I don't think it is that clear to anyone else.
Yeah,
so which makes it seem even more horrible.
Yeah,
that's
true. I think that's totally true. And I think especially for Lorelei, the beginning of her relationship with Jess is far too bound up in the end of her relationship with Dean. And that like, it's not an overlap in the sense of like she cheats on him or anything, but it's definitely like an
emotion. She kind of does.
But it's like an emotional overlap, definitely. Like causes the other.
Yeah. In a way, though, I think that's a good point in Rory's overarching story, because it does make her seem a bit less perfect.
Yeah.
Because it's quite questionable what she's doing, because everyone really clearly knows that she's emotionally basically cheating on Dean.
Yeah, I quite relate to that part of her that sort of knows she's doing something wrong but won't admit it to anyone. She like is never really honest with her mum or anyone about like when she's spending time with Jess, or the fact that she like these accidental quote mark situations that keep happening aren't accidental at all. Especially at that age, I feel like you just sort of do what you want and then try and like justify it retrospectively later.
Yeah.
And I found that more relatable than her like perfect girl image. Definitely.
I think she's brought closer to you almost, because you as a viewer, you're the one who sees it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you notice those things. And like, it's much more believable than her just being just the perfect girl at that point.
Let's talk about Dean quickly for a second though. So I really, really liked Dean when I first started watching it, because I just thought, oh, he's so like nice and dependable and like a good foil to Rory's like more fiery, quick-tempered leanings, you know, because he's just always going to be there. And so, but I feel like it's a skillful thing in the writing that I felt like that to start with, and then I was like, okay, no, he's really dull. Yeah. You know, that what was a virtue became a vice.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I think there's almost a sense that Rory outgrows Dean. And there's a lot of those early episodes, I think so much about Rory like literally physically running away from boys that show interest in her. And she has no idea what she's doing, and she needs someone who's really, really patient and encouraging to sort of help her into that first relationship. And there's a great line where Lorelai later says, you know, most of us didn't have first boyfriends like Dean. Yeah. We had first boyfriends like this guy in the fourth grade who asked to go out with me, and then I didn't see him again for 7 years. You know, like, I love that idea that he's really sort of encouraged her. And then as she gets older and she gets a bit more confident and she's so quick and really wants someone who can kind of challenge her a bit, and it seems like Dean isn't really doing that for her. There's so many episodes where she's like, please just give this book another try, and he's a bit like, oh, okay, but don't you want to come and watch my, you know, hockey game? And she's a bit like, not really. And their interests diverge and they just become quite different kinds of people.
Yeah,
I also feel like later on we get to see Dean hardening into quite an unpleasant person at times. So like the way he treats Lindsay, and I'm thinking particularly of the one of the episodes that is right at the epicenter of like the cheating thing, when Lindsay is like so obsessed with trying to make good roast beef, and you see her like in different shops like asking people like, but it went wrong, tell me again how to do it. And then you see at the end like her dishing up this big roast in front of Dean, and like he cuts into it and it's perfect, and she's so excited, and he just sits and she's like kissing him and hugging him, be like, look, I did it. And and he's just sitting there like, oh, beef made by Lindsay. It's like, you dick, like even if you aren't in love with her anymore, just be excited that she did a good thing she was trying to do.
I feel like in that moment Dean is treating Lindsay in the same way that Rory treated Dean, except he's
exactly.
older
yeah.
and
yeah.
probably and married and should
yeah,
probably
should
know better.
Yeah,
yes, absolutely.
So what do you guys think about Logan, Pinya?
I don't really like him, to be honest.
I'm not a Logan fan either, and I feel quite conflicted about why, because I think a lot of other Gilmore Girls watchers, I don't know if you agree with this, Caroline, would be like, well, actually, Logan is a pretty good boyfriend to Rory, and he is, like, their personalities match in quite key ways.
That's kind of where I am, in the sense that, yeah, I agree, I think they are quite a good match for each other, and that with a few exceptional incidents aside, he is pretty nice to her. But I don't find him attractive. Like,
I don't
you know what
either.
I mean?
Yeah,
so
that's, I don't see the, like, yeah.
I find it hard to be invested in him, because unlike both Rory and Jess, in spite of myself at times, I'm like, yeah, I could totally see why someone would, you know, do what she did for you, but I can't see that with Logan.
And I feel like a lot of his initial appeal rests on his wealth and his charm. Like those Life and Death Brigade episodes, and all the times that he can like make a big scene in Rory's classrooms and stuff like that. A lot of that, I don't know, depends on the idea that he's been able to like hire someone to like run around in a stupid police costume or persuade one of his friends to do something embarrassing. And I don't know, for me, I can see why Rory likes that, because I think, as we talk a little bit later on in the podcast, we know that Rory actually probably does quite like status and wealth and things like that, even if she kind of wishes she didn't. She's not quite the same as Lorelai in that way. It makes me uncomfortable that that's part of his appeal, especially in those early episodes, that his like eliteness is part of his appeal.
He also has that appeal for someone with a character like Rory's, where she's quite shy but also quite confident at times, that she sort of flips between the two, where the shy part of her would be like, oh god, this is so embarrassing, why is he making such a fuss, and the other part of her be like, wow, look at me with a boyfriend who's like going to all this effort to create all these stunts for me.
And the fact that he'll like make her jump off a thing, that's really, I guess, what Rory's looking for in a relationship, and why she moved on from Dean. She wanted a guy who could like maybe pull her into more exciting situations, because she does want that, but sometimes she just finds it difficult to like make the first step, I think.
But do you think that in part, obviously, like it's a smaller divergence, but Tristan as well was kind of like that.
That's a really good point.
A distraction in terms of, because she was the Dean storyline was still going on, and then he's completely, and he's just dick basically, but then he also like brings another kind of level.
Yeah, I think there are definitely parallels between Tristan and Logan, yeah. Though I think Tristan is less charismatic than Logan and pulls stuff off a lot less well, despite the fact that he's like handsome and blonde and rich. You can see why she's like, but he's also just a loser. Mm. And he's a lot less sure of himself. He's a lot more insecure than Logan. Mm. Logan seems to know himself quite well.
I do really respect the writers of those early series for not doing with Tristan and Rory what would be the really easy plot line, which is the, like, when she first arrives at the school, he deliberately calls her by the wrong name and is mean to her, and then they come to love each other. Like, yeah. The kind of pigtails in the schoolyard to final kiss at the end credits. They don't do that. They make it more complicated than that.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the show's real strengths, is that at times it will go for what you expect, but at other times it resists it.
Okay, I think we should do a quick vote. If Rory had to end up with one of her exes, I know that perhaps a more interesting plotline would be that she had a completely new boyfriend altogether, but if she had to end up with one of the exes, who would you go for, Caroline?
I think Logan.
Pina?
I don't know. I know I said that I hated Jess at the start of the podcast, but maybe even Jess?
Yeah, I think I'm Jess too.
Yeah.
Especially because I love that episode where he comes back and he's written a book and he seems a lot more mature. Mm-hmm. And exactly. He sort of calls Rory out on her shitty behaviour in that episode. And I think hopefully he has grown into like quite a respectable adult. I don't know. To me, there's something there. And I just hate Logan.
In a way, like, I unwittingly parallel Luke and Jess.
Definitely.
And really like Luke. So,
I do that in a way that I think of comes off badly for Jess, because I think especially in like the first few episodes when Jess moves to Stars Hollow, he treats Luke so badly when Luke is just really trying to make things easy for him and, you know, give him his space and like not bug him. And yet he still is horrible to him.
It's true. And one of the key things about Luke is that he's so into like family, like the hardware sign and all of that stuff in a way that and was as a young man. You know that when he was like 17, he was helping his dad run the business. But I think you can also imagine Luke as a teenager giving off really surly vibes to people and people being like, what is wrong with that kid? And him having a really bad reputation, but actually him growing up into being this like very, very sweet guy.
Yeah, that's true. And actually his grown-up resistance to twee traditions in Stars Hollow probably had its root in some like grumpy teen acting out, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So talking about Luke, we should talk about Lorelai's love interests, which seems a little more straightforward to me than Rory's love life, because we all love Luke, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's team Luke, surely. Is anyone not team Luke or have leanings to Christopher or Max or...
I really liked Christopher when they first were going to get together before Sherry got pregnant. I was like, yes!
Yeah, I do remember that sort of wedding. It's Suki's wedding, right? Where all this stuff happens, where like Jess comes back and he kisses Rory. And
that is such an amazing episode. The bit where like both Rory and Lorelai have like these incredible like turbulent things happen in like the 10 minutes before they have to walk down the aisle with Suki. And then they both like stand together ready to go. And Lorelai just goes like, you okay? And Rory goes, yep.
Yeah, it's like a classic, it's like quite anti-Gilmore Girls levels of drama, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I agree that it all seems pretty perfect, the idea of Lorelai and Christopher getting back together at that point. But I think even as it's happening, you're aware that it's kind of too good to be true, and Christopher isn't that perfect a guy, and it's probably not going to work that way. But I wonder if that relationship had just too much baggage, basically, to ever fully become like a new grown-up relationship. I think maybe they bring out fairly childish parts of each other just because they've known each other for so long, but
definitely. I think that's true.
I don't know. Max, I don't know how I feel about Max. I remember that episode where he lends her, is it Swan's Way or something?
Yeah.
And she doesn't read it. And I think that for me is just like, yeah, this was never gonna work, right? Like, I think Lorelai probably, because she's got a bit of arrested development, right? She's still a bit of a teenager in some ways. I think she quite liked the idea of like getting with the professor.
Mm. Yeah.
But she was never going to be the serious maybe that she moved.
Also, I think it's just quite abrupt in a way how it happens in the series. Mm. It is a little bit like, oh, we've gone on like 3 dates and now we're going to get married. Mm-hmm. Like, it is kind of odd. And I was like, oh, what?
Yeah.
No.
It never made sense.
Yeah, well, I was quite into Max up until the point when they're suddenly getting married. Because I was like, as a like a gradual slide from a casual to serious dating person, I think Max is good for Lorelai and they could like grow together. But then when, because isn't it like they have a disagreement about how they should conduct their relationship, and his solution to it is like, well, let's get married, and she's like, okay then. At that point I was like, no, get out.
This show seems really anti-rushed marriages, right? Because like Luke and Nicole, it all goes to shit. Max and Lorelai, all goes to shit. Dean and Lindsay, not good. But then Suki and Jackson,
but that does work out. But that wasn't rushed, was it?
I guess
they've been friends for a really long time. And then also, I feel like they were going out for a while before they decided to get married.
Well, they get engaged at the Tisket Tasket basket episode, and because Jackson has suggested them moving in together, and I think they've only been going out like less like 6 months or something
it's important the fact that they did have an existing relationship for quite a long time before it became anything else.
So what do we think's going to be happening with Luke and Lorelai in the revival?
I'm stressed about it, just you mentioning it.
It seems like from the trailer that they're in like couples therapy to or Lorelai's just having therapy to talk about the fact that she's unsure about her relationships last marriage. Do we think they're married?
I don't know. It's hard to tell. I mean,
I don't know.
I feel like there weren't really any indications about... They're definitely together, but not, like, super happy.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel sad about that because I feel like Luke is actually really good at talking about his emotions, even though he doesn't seem it. I love that episode where he's, like, got the book. the self-help book. That, to me, it's just the fact that he would even do that.
Exactly.
It's, like, so great. So I think if they just had a conversation about stuff, it would probably be fine, right?
Do you think Luke has to be endgame for Lorelai? Do you think...
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think so too.
I was contemplating a version whereby like they kind of amicably, as far as possible, come to an end.
Oh, that makes me feel horrible
in my
heart.
Would that still be okay? And I think no.
Yeah, you just saying that has like struck a horrible feeling.
It's been the heart of the show right from the very, very beginning.
Exactly,
the idea that they will, they won't, they will, they.
A trivia question that may or may not appear in the quiz. What are the first two words of the entire series? Please, Luke. And I think that just shows, like, I don't know what the last four words are going to be, what Amy Sherman-Palladino plans for that, but like Luke and Lorelai's back and forth is just such a cornerstone of the show.
Yeah. And I think it's a good, like, balancing out the fact that Lorelai is, like, not a very good housekeeper and stuff like that, doesn't cook, and then Luke does.
Yeah.
And is kind of, in the end, almost even a bit more, like you said, in connection with his own emotions and stuff. It would be a good balancing out for them to stay together, I think.
I completely agree. Well, we're all excited to see what happens next in the love lives of the Gilmore Girls.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So now we're joined by Barbara Speed. It's very nice to have you back on Seriously, Barbara. So you're a big Gilmore Girls fan. Presumably you've been watching all the trailers and stuff in the build-up. What sort of struck you about the coverage leading up to the revival?
Yeah, so I think we've obviously all read those kind of, I mean, you did one yourself, Anna, kind of picking apart every single frame in the trailer because there's so much in there. And obviously even the inclusion of certain characters means a lot, which includes the fact that Rory's three main boyfriends are all set to appear in
all
the
exes.
All the exes, everyone's dream. But I think what's funny about this is that this obviously led to huge speculation about which of them she would end up with and how her love life would kind of end up, given that we're expecting this is the end of the Gilmore Girls story.
Mm-hmm.
But the show's creator, Amy Sherman Palladino, spoke out in an interview recently, which I thought was really interesting, saying, "You will miss the fact that she's unemployed," which I really like because I think it's really easy to, because so many shows, the narrative is all about relationships, it's easy to forget that actually in this show, it kind of isn't.
Mm.
Like what's really striking to me is that there'll often be an episode where one of, I mean, whether it's Lane or Lorelai or Rory are fighting with a boyfriend or have broken up and they kind of don't talk about it for like three episodes. Because obviously you do have to get on with your life. It's not that Lorelai doesn't go into the inn. She just kind of carries on. And in the same way, I think that, but however, if they lost their job, it would be
massive.
Yeah, it would destroy their confidence.
And yeah.
Rory gets the most upset by people telling her she's not good at a job, not by guys.
Yeah, kind of, and that's basically what that big fallout is about towards the end of the show, where she basically, Logan's dad is like, "You're not cut out to be a journalist," right? And it causes all these sort of fights between her and her mum. And I, in my mind, a lot of the time, I remember that as sort of like the Logan related fight, which is obviously completely wrong. It's not really anything to do with Logan or Logan's family. It's actually to do with the idea that she might not be good enough at her job, and a senior newspaper man has told her that she's not good enough at what she wants to do.
There's actually a really direct evocation of this in an episode I just watched from the beginning of series 5, when it's the test weekend for the new inn and Jason turns up wanting to be like, "Oh, Lorelai, you know, we've been apart, but let's get back together." And she's like, "I'm busy, I'm working, it's a really important weekend, I can't stop just because you've decided to turn up." And he's like, "Can I get a room?" She's like, "No, we're fully booked." And then she makes him like sit, and she's like, "You can just sit in the lounge, and you know, if I have time, I'll talk to you." And he sits there for hours and hours and hours while you see her going about her job and doing it brilliantly and everything being a great big success. And you, for me, that was like a really explicit demonstration of the fact that work is more important. That's ultimately what her long-term life plan is about.
And there's another moment like that, I think, where Lorelai has an option of becoming a kind of consultant for inns around the world in a very vague plot point. It's kind of never really explicitly spoken about, but she tells Luke about this and he's just like, "What? Are you not going to acknowledge that I live here?" And she just doesn't, she just completely misses the whole thing. She's like, "Oh, well, if I want to do that for my career, I will." And he's like, "Okay, I guess I'll stay here then."
Yeah. And it's a bit like when Jess dumps Rory, it's just before she goes off to Yale. Well, he doesn't dump her, but when Jess disappears, she calls him, doesn't she, from her Chilton graduation. And she's like, "I can tell that that's you," or he calls her, "I can tell that that's you. I'm going around the world with my mum tomorrow and that's not changing. And then I'm going to Yale and that's not changing. So there's not really anything left to say, is there?" So I completely agree that they definitely do try and like create these characters that are like definitely concerned about like who they're going to end up with and definitely sometimes get lonely, but their main goals in life are career focused.
And also, if you think of the bits of the series that are maybe personally upsetting to you, they're always maybe when mothers and daughters fall out.
Mm.
Or I remember the episodes where Rory's been told she'll never make it in journalism as being the most chilling viewing of my life. I was like, I just completely understand. Like, how could you like carry on after that? It's so convincing.
Yeah, and I sometimes struggle with the characterization of Rory, especially in the early seasons. It's like good at everything. Like everything she puts her hand to, she just like completely, all the boys are like falling at her feet constantly in a way that is like ridiculous. Plus she's getting all her work in on time. She's getting great grades and everything. Like occasionally there'll be an episode where she like got a B in something and she'll be like panicking about it. I like when they start to underdo that a little bit in later seasons where, because I always think when Paris doesn't get into Harvard and Rory does, it's so crushingly unfair. And you think, oh my God, poor Paris. She actually works so much harder than Rory and she has nothing else in her life when Rory has loads of things in her life.
But there is a little bit of vindication of that, I feel, once they go to Yale and they're both doing the student paper and there's that plot line for just one episode where Rory keeps turning up and like handing pieces in and they keep not printing them because the editor's like, oh, it's just boring. It was really boring.
I know, but then Paris sort of loses again in the whole arc of that plot line because she's like too intense, quote marks, which I hate.
Too hard, whereas Rory's like the fun one.
She's like perfect. She just manages to do everything effortlessly. So I really liked when she didn't get the jobs she wanted in season 7. I know a lot of people have problems with season 7, but I did like that they were like, oh, guess what? You didn't get the like journalism trainee, whatever it was, that big newspaper job. Obviously the job she ends up with is really cool, but I'm excited for the revival to like look at that, the idea that she's actually not found it completely easy to just be a full-time employed journalist all the time. And I think it's probably quite realistic as well.
Yeah, and I think also she's obviously, it's meant to be that she can't fail, that's her problem, that it's like she can't deal as soon as things aren't perfect, which is probably quite a good plot line for the series as a whole because it's so contained and they're all in this town, and then as soon as something disturbs the equilibrium, like nothing can cope. And she's very much like that she's only she succeeds, she's good at everything, that's what she does, and then everything goes hugely wrong whenever that starts, like when she just steals a boat because she's messed up one thing, which is kind of a slightly overblown representation of that. Still quite a stupid plot point.
Yeah, very bizarre.
They're like, what could she do?
Maybe she'll steal a boat.
Yeah. But it has its genesis right at the very start, really. Because I remember in, like, it's one of the first two or three episodes when she first goes to Chilton and, you know, like, she gets a C or something on her first bit of work. And the teacher's like, yeah, this is good, but, you know, you've been at a very different kind of school and you've got a lot of catching up to do. But Rory's like, no, this is unreasonable. This is awful. I've failed. And Lorelai has to, like, talk her down and be like, it's fine, we'll just work harder.
Yeah, and it is relatable, that feeling.
Mm, oh,
and
totally.
I think especially to, like, the people in this podcast room who have, like, presumably followed fairly similar, like, paths as Rory on the way to, like, trying to become a journalist.
I would say I am generally like not massively pro Dean, I don't think, but the way he behaves in early seasons where he just totally accepts that he is secondary to both Rory's work and also like her relationship with her mum is really cute.
Yeah, he just sort of lets her carry on with whatever she's doing. But there are a few episodes where he gets a bit like, but you said you were studying tomorrow and we were going to hang out tonight, Rory.
Yeah, that's true.
Even Logan gets really bothered when she's not at Yale and he won't even bring it up because he's like, this is your thing. You'd be so, like, assuming she'd be upset even hearing about school. So at least they all slightly recognise that.
Her priorities.
About her, yeah.
Definitely. And I think that I love that episode where Jess comes back and it's like, why are you hanging out with this guy? And what's this? You're not going to school. Like, that is completely crazy. That's not you at all. And so they all have this association. I think it can be a bit like weird and like good girl fetishy, but they do have this association that work comes first.
Speaking of career related stuff, what do you make of the plot lines involving Richard and his job?
I think the Emily stuff is interesting. Whenever he starts a new business, she's like trying to sort of support him in terms of like organizing a function.
And he's just not grateful.
Yeah.
Like, there's that awful scene where he's getting very upset that Rory's not at Yale and he's like, what's her life going to be? Just like organizing parties. And she's just like,
hello,
I'm right here. But I think that's a real shame that, like, I suppose the show is acknowledging the different kinds of work and sort of trying to undermine that dichotomy, which I guess is interesting in terms of Rory as well, because if you think, oh, she can only be a success if she's a success in the working world, maybe that's something this revival is trying to slightly question, because I think Emily is a really interesting figure in that sense. And even Lorelai, who kind of has only later in her life makes a kind of success of her career, but that's because she's like raising a child
on her own and stuff.
So is she still working in the inn in the revivals? Did they mention that in the trailer? I can't remember.
I don't remember seeing either way.
I feel like that she maybe was walking in the inn in one shot, but I can't fully remember. But I sort of, that's the expectation I have for Lorelai's career path. I don't know if you guys, because I feel like once she had basically decided to set up the Dragonfly with Suki, she had really reached the sort of peak of her, of what she wanted to do.
Yeah, well, that seems to be her narrative in this revival, that she's almost in a rut, or she's almost found her sort of happy ending at the end of the other series.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like, where do you go from there?
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess is quite an interesting way of taking it. I think Richard's quite interesting because Richard's sort of, just to return to that, sort of always seems a bit corrupt or something. And he obviously uses his kind of professional power in his personal life, like when he insures the inn for Lorelai, sort of to have some control almost, it seems, or like trying to give her these contacts with other people. That's obviously very much how he identifies.
His self-worth definitely lies in work as well.
Yeah, which is interesting when you think about Rory, that maybe that's where that comes from.
Yeah.
Rather than identifying, because she obviously takes turns almost identifying with each of her grandparents at different times.
Well, I was watching the one where they do Harvard-Yale game party thing. Yeah. And before the whole like Penelin Lott incident, they're talking about how Richard and Rory are quite similar, because that there's Richard getting involved in everything but being quite stoic about anything that might have upset him, and Rory can be quite like that as well. They can quite like throw themselves, I think, into their studies and their work and like forget about any sort of like personal problems going on at the same time.
And Rory can get quite caught up in status as well. She's actually not kind of the working class hero you want her to be.
No,
she does identify with her grandparents. She kind of doesn't mind all the ceremony around them. And I mean, I think when she first goes to the Huntsberger's house and they kind of criticize her and say she's from a bad background, her reaction isn't "that's an insane thing to care about." It's "does she know who I am?"
Yeah.
My ancestors came here on the Mayflower. And you're like, that's not the point. But she obviously does quite like that this is her roots, that
definitely
there is status. Yeah. For someone so obsessed with rules and regulations and these kind of very fancy Ivy League schools, I guess in a way she does quite care about that.
She volunteers to do all the Daughters of the American Revolution stuff that Lorelei opted out of at her age and all that kind of thing. And that's I think we're shown that that's partly because she wants to like spend time with her grandmother and build bridges and stuff, but also partly I think she just likes it.
Mm. Yeah, and I suppose she is sort of quite stoic, and I think obviously slightly genteel people she quite likes. Mm. She kind of likes chit chat and kind of being quite well presented, unlike Lorelei.
Well, I think these are topics we're going to talk more about with Laura Snapes in a later segment of the podcast. So now we're joined by culture writer Laura Snapes, who writes for The Guardian and Pitchfork and lots of places. Laura, you've been rewatching Gilmore Girls, as lots of people have been. What struck you on the rewatch?
I haven't been super diligent with it. I've only made it as far about halfway through season two.
There's a lot of episodes.
Yeah, and it's not so long since I rewatched it, because I originally started watching it when it was on Nickelodeon in about 2000. And I think I got to about as far as season three, and then they stopped showing it, and you'd get like one on the Hallmark Channel, one on Channel 5, one on E4 once in a while. So it's not so long since they actually properly completed it. But the thing that really struck me about it, watching it as like a grown-up woman, not a 12-year-old, was, you know, people talk about Gilmore Girls as this really cosy utopian show, and it is, like, nothing particularly bad happens. But the kind of divisions of, like, money and class and how you feel that you belong to certain spaces, that really kind of leapt out at me. I don't think it's quite as, like, benign as everybody says it is.
Yeah, I think that's so true. And that's something that is sort of explored in Lorelai's plotlines a lot more, I think, probably than Rory's plotlines, especially with her decision to leave home at such a young age and sort of find a space for herself.
Yeah, definitely. And those episodes you see where she, you know, goes back for the Friday night dinners, and she goes upstairs to her old bedroom, and you see her kind of looking at the person who left the room. You know, all the posters are still up there, and it's like a sort of weird shrine to this truncated person.
Yeah, in the first episode, I feel like they make that contrast quite strongly between Stars Hollow and the Gilmore household, like Emily and Richard's house, where they play that song, "That's Where the Colours Don't Go," and she's like looking at this big sort of grey stone while that's playing. And I think she just, from a very young age and in adulthood, feels really out of step with these sort of quite grand spaces.
But then the whole time the show's kind of in dialogue with that, right? Like when Rory decides that she wants to do the coming out ball for the Daughters of the American Revolution, and her mother's like, well, if that's what you want. And then she spends the whole episode like on the sidelines of this thing that she rejected, pretending to be supportive because her daughter wants to take part in it.
Yeah, it's really interesting watching Rory kind of shuttle between those two worlds, because for Lorelai, she's going back in and she's finding it really jarring, like you were saying. But then for Rory, it's a like whole new fertile territory. And you see her go into Chilton for the first time, and she looks really overwhelmed by how big it is and all that kind of architecture, because she's never kind of grown up in it. But then you kind of see her acclimatized to it. Like the first time she and Lorelai have that really, really big argument, she runs away to her grandparents' house, and it's just kind of unthinkable to Lorelai. It's not just them falling out, it's kind of like a betrayal of her values that she'd rather be there than in Stars Hollow.
And then you get this really uncomfortable feeling from Emily where she feels both torn because she wants her daughter to feel at home in their house, and you know, she's always trying to wrangle her to come via, you know, the Friday night dinner agreement and other things, but then also sort of resenting Lorelai for almost encouraging Rory to not feel at home in that space at the same time. So you've got this very weird triangle of like three women trying to encourage a sense of family and belonging over three very different ages and two very different spaces.
And on top of all of that, you have to put the money issue,
mm-hmm.
because Emily and Richard have loads of money, and at least Richard certainly wants to give it to his daughter and his granddaughter, but an awful lot of the time it comes with strings attached, and one of them is the dinners, but then also the loan agreement that Rory makes with them for her Yale tuition. And all of this ties up the money in the places, doesn't it? You know, you can have this money to have this fancy education, but you have to come to the big house and, you know, play the client every Friday.
Yeah, those kind of financial relationships are so interesting. It's like, it is, their relationship is fundamentally a contract, but then I think, you know, Emily especially likes having them kind of in debt to them in an emotional way, not just necessarily in a financial way.
Totally.
But then she can't understand that they don't aspire to that life. It's, they only want the money for this tuition. It's not, but you know, she goes to their house and she can't understand why they don't want nicer things and to live closer to school and things like that. That episode where they go to Stars Hollow for the first time for Rory's birthday, I found really affecting, where you see Emily in particular kind of turn up in Stars Hollow and realise she's been absent for 16 years of her granddaughter's life, but she's kind of been raised by this whole weird village of people who know her so much better than she does. I think that's one of the best scenes in the whole thing.
Yeah, it's so nuanced, I think, that whole discussion. And I find myself really feeling for Emily in these parts, because although I understand Lorelai's frustration with the idea that you could like buy someone's favour or buy a bond with somebody, I do see Emily struggling to have that kind of effortless, cool parenting that Lorelai has. You see this problem where she is trying as hard as she can to give everything to her children and her granddaughter, and she can't do it, and they're rejecting the money, but they also don't want to just tell her about their lives. She has to like really force them to give her information about themselves. And I feel really like sad for her when she's in those moments of quandary.
And just stuff like after Rory finishes high school and they've had got this long planned idea of going backpacking in Europe, and Emily and to an extent Richard are like, well, you know, we'll come. You should look up our friends. You can have an amazing odyssey around Europe. And they're like, no, thanks. We'd like to stay in hostels, please. It's what we've always planned. It's what we've always wanted. And that's what we're going
to
do.
I think it's in the first season again when Emily's trying to buy a birthday present for Rory. And she's like, what about a purse? What about a scarf? And Lorelai's just like, just these karma beads will be fine, because it's 2000 and she's 16 years old. I think that's one of the things that, you know, I was kind of quibbling with the idea that it's comforting. It obviously is comforting, but one of the things that I think makes it kind of comforting in a very real way is that nobody's the villain in it. You, just like you were saying, like, you sympathise with Emily and you sympathise with Lorelai and you sympathise with Rory a little bit as well. Nobody's right, and everybody's got legitimate frustrations with how they're all communicating with each other and their own inability to communicate better with each other.
Yeah. And I like that this show is never too on the nose when it comes to like class differences and things like that. But
until Logan's helicopter in season 7.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, season 7, some of the nuance goes, I think, completely. We can all agree. Yeah, I really love the episode that I just completely forgot about until I was rewatching. That is so weird. That is That Damn Donna Reed, where they have, yes, Donna Reed night and they're trying to encourage Dean to watch Donna Reed. And then he gets a bit upset with their like mocking of this very traditional 1950s housewife stereotype. And he becomes really uncomfortable with it, partly because his mum's a stay-at-home mum and she cooks and she does, you know, low-key part-time work. And I think there's a real like subtle class thing going on there as well, about how, you know, this sort of very liberal household that Rory and Lorelai have and their independence can sometimes clash with like Dean's much more like blue collar style of living. And it's so fun to see that introduced in an episode via this weird like pop culture reference. And I think that they can do that really well in this show. They can sort of like go on something that's a completely bizarre tangent and pull threads out about like class and opportunity and things like that without making it too like in your face. Like, hey, seems like there's some class differences between Rory and her guy. Like,
that's really interesting, actually. I hadn't even thought of that before, that even though Lorelai rejected the very like upper class New England-y lifestyle of her parents and she rejected all the trappings of it and she moved away to become a single parent and to manage for herself and stuff, she still carries some of the expectations and values that go with it. You know, in the same way that I'm thinking, like, in the early 20th century, when you got, like, the children of aristocrats, like, rejected their parents and became bohemians in Bloomsbury and stuff. It's like, yeah, but you still believe most of the things that your parents believe, and you have the same expectations for ultimately what your life will be like. You're not willing to completely rip up the fabric of who you are. And hence, you know, Lorelai may have completely rejected her mother's way of life, but like her mother, she's never going to stay home and cook.
And I think she's definitely inherited a lot of her father's beliefs as well about, you know, that very 80s thing, like hard work, bootstrap. She's in education from like the very first season. She's got these aspirations and she's kind of not willing to be shaken from them.
Yeah, and sometimes it feels as though Lorelai might not be aware of things like, for example, the fact that Dean chooses to stay in Stars Hollow and get married at 18.
Yeah, they're really very judgmental of that.
They can't understand it. But Rory gets this Chiltern education and her Yale tuition paid for by her grandparents. And a lot of people wouldn't have grandparents to loan them the money for that. So they are still very much products of their class in that sense.
Yeah, I remember the little scene where I think it's Rory and Lorelai run into Dean and his sister, maybe. It's like way after they've broken up and Rory's just got all her college offers. And Dean asks, oh, like, so I heard you got into Harvard, well done. And Rory's like, oh, yeah, thank you. And then Dean says, you know, I got into South Connecticut State. And he says it, obviously he's really happy, but he says it in a, like, I know you're going to think it's
slightly
shit,
embarrassed,
but I'm really happy, so I'm telling you anyway, mm-hmm. way. And that's presumably because, you know, that's what he wants to do, but also it's within the realms of what's possible for him to do.
Yeah, and he can stay at home and be married. Yeah, so I think it's not something that's ever discussed that up front, but it's still, like you say, it's not like it's all comfort and rosy all the time, and these issues aren't explored. They're just done from a slightly sideways perspective, which I quite like.
One of my favourite things about Gilmore Girls is that it's ostensibly a show about teenagers. It was originally shown on the WB network, but they just use them as a Trojan horse to talk about old people. One of my favourite things that's happened this year is I lent my Nana the DVDs to Gilmore Girls, and she's been absolutely steaming through them. I had to post her all the rest of them after giving her season one.
That's so cute. Do you like chat about it on the phone?
A little bit. We've not talked about it in depth yet, but I'm really curious to see who she kind of sympathises with.
Yeah, I wonder who she's like following.
Yeah, totally. I'd love to know who she's rooting for.
Looking back, I noticed there are things that I remember so vividly. Like, for example, the scene where Rory and Jess go to, quote, get ice cream in the car. Like, those were the things that obviously really caught my imagination when I was watching this at like 15, maybe. But now looking back, there are all these things with Emily and Lorelai that actually you realise that a lot of the driving plot elements of the show aren't really about like whether Rory's going to choose Jess or Dean. Mm-hmm. It's much more about like how their circumstances are changing and things like that. So yeah, I completely agree. I didn't realise it was on the WB network first.
Oh yeah, I think it was like alongside One Tree Hill and stuff, because that's, I guess they lose Chad Michael Murray to yeah. that pretty early on.
I love that weird episode where they have to be like, oh, he's going to military school / One Tree Hill.
Oh yeah, I remember that. I hadn't put those two things together, but that is absolutely true.
That is an interesting thing about watching it, you know, when you're 12 and watching it when you're 27, is like, I think a lot of those kind of big shows about teenagers, like Freaks and Geeks and With My So-Called Life, when I watch them as an adult versus watching them as a teenager, it makes me completely sympathise with different characters. Like, mm-hmm. in My So-Called Life, I look at Angela and whatever her friend's called, and I'm like, these guys are pains in the ass. I am so on her parents' side. But with Gilmore Girls, I don't really have that switching allegiance. I kind of still feel the same about it. It's not trying to manipulate you if you're a teenager or an old person. I think it's got really quite a balanced kind of portrayal of all the different age groups.
Yeah, and I'm so surprised now when I watch it back and I'm like, really, I don't think I really sympathised with Emily much when I was growing up at all, because it was just like, oh God, she's infringing on these young people's liberties. But now when you watch it back, you're like, God, this is so complicated for her. And even characters like Paris just seem so much more sympathetic watching it back.
Yeah, it's been really interesting for us, I think, because I hadn't watched it when I was younger at all. Like, this isn't a rewatch for me. This is my first watch in advance of the specials. And like, I love Paris. I've loved her from the beginning, even when she was being really horrible. I also instinctively really hated Jess, which did yeah. not chime at all with Anna's teenage experiences of the show.
Yeah, we'll have to discuss that in more detail.
So, Pinya, what are you most looking forward to in the revival episodes?
Well, I'm not sure it's the most, but I would like to see a Hep Alien reunion.
So what do you want to see happen in the new episodes?
I've thought about what I really don't want to see happen. It seems like from the trailers that there's going to be some kind of like Luke, Lorelai, Minefield and their relationship. And I really hate it when a show comes back to break a couple up just to reunite them again, because you know that's what's going to happen at the end. They're not going to do another like Christopher Bateman switch. I really hope we get like a good exploration of what's happened to Rory's career, basically, because we leave her on such a high note in 2007, going off to cover the Obama campaign. But it seems like, from what I can infer, things haven't gone particularly well for her. And I think that would be a really, you know, she entered the workplace just before the recession. And not that I hope it goes like too detailed into that, but I think that would be a really interesting thing for it to explore, kind of the crushed aspirations of a very talented young woman.
Unemployed in this trailer. She's worried. The thing she cares about is her job. She is not bothered about which of these losers she ends up with. Which I guess is quite an interesting way of taking it.
So Anna, what do you most want to see happen in the revival episodes?
I think one thing that's really missing from Gilmore Girls is a gay plotline or yes. some more gay characters. So I would like to see at least one character have some sort of gay relationship. Perhaps we were saying that Mallory Ortberg suggested that Emily could have a late in life lesbian affair, which would be great.
That would be excellent.
But to be honest, I'd settle for anyone.
Yeah, it is a big hole in the show, isn't it?
Definitely. So Caroline, what would you like to see in the revival?
It's really sappy, but I want everyone to live happily ever after. I know that sounds lame, but it's true. I don't think I could handle, especially not right now, if they introduced melodrama and difficulty to Stars Hollow.
Just happiness.
Just happiness for everyone, including Kirk.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
If you enjoyed the show, why not subscribe to make sure you never miss another episode? You can find us wherever you get your podcasts, including in iTunes, where you could also leave us a rating and a review because it helps other people find the show.
Our first ever live event, the Seriously Gilmore Girls quiz, is now sold out, but you can put your name on the waiting list by going to seriouslypod.com and clicking on events. Don't worry if you can't come though, there will be a special episode of the podcast devoted to all things Stars Hollow as well.
Also on the website, you'll find all our back episodes, including our specials on Harry Potter, Love Actually and Friends.
We're also available many other places on the internet, including on Twitter, Facebook and Tumblr, SRSLYpod on all of them.
We love getting your recommendations for things we should feature on the show or just hearing your thoughts on what we've discussed. Get in touch on social media or email us on seriouslypod@gmail.com.
And if you feel strongly that more pop culture needs to be taken seriously, spread the word and tell your friends and family about the podcast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.